Good evening, everyone. This is host Terry Lynn Coop on the Blue Plate Special, and we're changing it up a little bit tonight on the menu. Instead of all this hard-bitten noir and crime drama we've been doing, tonight the subject is romance. And I have author Kimberly Nee with me here. She fell in love with historical romance when she was 16 and blames it all on Kathleen Woodwiss, since it was the flame and the flower that got her hooked. She's a native of New Jersey, where she lives with her husband, their two kids, and a lovable Roxy, a boxer lab mix. When she's not writing, she's a typical Jersey girl. She's a gym rat, and she loves the Giants, the Rangers, and Bruce Springsteen. How you doing tonight, Kim?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I am great. Thank you so much for coming on the show tonight. Said I've been talking about nothing but crime for the last two or three weeks now. So it's time for some kissy books.
Well, then you've come to the right place, since that is the crime and all that. I'm not good at those, but the romance, that's my thing.
And you call it, your series is called the Sebastiano series, correct?
Right.
So tell me about Sebastiano.
Well, I wrote the original draft way back like 20 years ago when I was still in high school. And I wanted to do something different because everybody was writing about dukes and the regency, and I didn't want to do that because, first of all, the peerage is just so complicated. The research makes your head hurt. So I decided to create this island in the West Indies, and I wanted to make a pirate, a Spanish pirate, my hero. And that's where Inigo Sebastiano came from. And his story is Eden's Pass, which is the first book in the series. It's written way back when I was still only about 18 years old. And the first draft compared to what the book is going to be like, not even close anymore. It's been through so many changes.
Like what?
Well, I originally had the heroine. She was coming from Ireland, and he intercepted her ship and took her prisoner. And it was really more along the lines of the really old school, like Joanna Lindsay's, where they were kind of rapey. And as time goes on, it's not so acceptable anymore, so I had to change that. So she became a runaway slave, and I put her on another island where she ran from a sugar plantation where she was mistreated. And again, the story just kind of took on a life of its own and rewrote itself.
So that's Eden's Pass. Now,
right.
One question as I was looking through your books, do you have the same women in each book, or are there different heroines and the same hero?
No, they're all, actually, Eden's Pass is the first generation. It's Inigo and Finn. Tiger Eyes, which is the second book, is Diego Santa Cruz, who is Inigo's best friend, his second. And then the third book in this series involves Finn and Inigo's son. So the next couple of books have the kids, so it's the next generation.
Is that Rafe?
Yes.
So you
removed... books written. Hmm? I'm sorry,
go ahead.
Oh, go ahead. Oh, did I lose you?
No, we're here. You said you have books written.
Right, I have books written for, they have like six or seven kids, but not all of the books have seen the light of day yet, so I have to remember whose story belongs to which character.
Gotcha. So you're with Entangled Publishing now, right?
Yes, I am. The second and third books in the series were released last month. The first book will be coming out in about 2 weeks.
And that's which one?
The first book is Eden's Pass. I said that'll be released on the 25th of September. And books two and three, which are Tiger Eyes and When I'm With You, came out on August 21st. So the order got a little jacked up.
And that's it. How'd you end up with Entangled? Where were you before?
I was with Sam Hain. Those three books actually were originally released by Sam Hain. The first one came out in 2008, the second one in 2010, and the third one came out just last year, and then Sam Hain announced they were closing. And my editor at Sam Hain went to Entangled. And basically they told us that they would be willing to look at any of the books that had been under contract with Sam Hain. And some would be offered contracts on. And thank goodness they picked up my series, So They Live Again.
That's excellent. I like Entangled a lot. I like their books.
Well, yeah, I was happy to get in with them because it was something I had been trying to do for a while to begin with. So I was sad to see Sam Hain go because they kind of gave me my start. But at the same time, when Entangled said, you know, we'll take a look, I was like, oh, yes, here, take them.
Books? You want books? I have books. Here, here's some books.
Right. Right, yeah. You want books? I got books.
And now you've intimated on social media that you've been working on editing a book. Which is that one of these, or is that the next one?
No, that was Eden's Path. So that's why it's coming out after the first two. Was when I got the rights back to it, I was originally working on fixing up parts of it that I never liked, and rewriting it. And when they were getting ready to release the second and third books, one of the editors was like, well, what happened with the first book? And I said, well, I was in the middle of trying to rewrite parts of it, and I hadn't decided what I was doing. And they were like, well, why don't you send it to us? And I said, why don't I send it to you? And I did.
Well, if I have to.
Yeah, right?
So to anyone who may have purchased a copy of Eden's Path back when it was with Sam Hain, when it comes out again in the 25th, is it going to be a significantly different book?
I think so. I tried to make the heroine, people either loved her or hated her. And the ones who hated her really hated her. And you don't want anyone to hate your heroine, so I tried to soften her up. And to do that, I had to change a couple of scenes, but the overall story is still the same.
Okay. But again, anyone who is a particular fan of it might want to revisit it in the new edition, correct?
Oh, I think they would. There were a couple – so the scenes that I rewrote when I went back and did my last read-through before I sent it off to my editor, I love them. I think they make her a stronger woman and a stronger heroine, and she's not waiting for the hero to rescue her, and she's not being like – because in the beginning, she was kind of a spoiled brat because she didn't want to be there. And she was really pushing his buttons, and people said that really turned them off to her. So I tried to keep the tension but change it so that she didn't come across as quite so bratty, I guess.
And it doesn't affect it if anybody reads these out of order. Can they – are they pretty much all standalone?
Yes. I tried to write them because, again, when I did them, I would do one story and then be like, well, you know what? I introduced a character here that I didn't think I would ever have, and she goes good with, let me tell his story. So I wrote them out of order. So they can be read out of order because aside from just knowing the family tree, which is not a big deal, that's all. You can read each one of them by themselves. Anything that happens in the previous book that I thought a reader would need to know, I made some way to work it in.
That's always important to me when I'm talking to a writer of serial, you know, of a series, is, you know, where's a good spot to jump in? And where would you suggest if someone was looking at your books and they only had time to grab one, which one would be a good place to jump in? Let's pretend Eden's Path is out.
Oh, wow. That's like trying to pick your favorite child. I know my favorite out of all of them was probably Tiger Eyes, because that one I had the best time writing, and I think it shows in the writing. I think it shows in the story. I just enjoyed writing this book.
And what's it about?
This is Diego's story, and Diego and Gabby are the hero and heroine, and they were back 5 years before the book starts. They're engaged, and Gabby panics and runs out at the last minute. Fast forward 5 years, and she's been basically jumped outside a bar in Port Royal, or Kingston. I'd have to go look. I can't remember what town I said it in. And she ends up in the hold of a ship with Diego. And they end up marooned together. Oh, I know, right? And they end up marooned together on an island, which is even worse. So, and they have to work together to survive, and then, of course, you know, old wounds open up, and they decide, they find out that they still care about each other. Things happen.
What's the historical period that these are set in? Roughly what year?
They're set in the Eden's Pass is in 1680.
Oh.
And Tiger Eyes is set in 1685. I tried to get it as close to the golden age of piracy as I could because I wanted to put that story in. It was a fun period to research, and there's not a whole lot at the time when I first started writing. There weren't a whole lot of books set in this time period, so I thought something different. My hero and heroine are people of color. He's Spanish, and Finn is Carib Indian. And so the research on that was interesting, and I thought, you know, something different. And then I made up my own island, and it was just such a lovely place.
Well, that is definitely about as far away from a regency as you can possibly get. And now we were in the green room. We were talking about, and again, are these good old-fashioned bodice rippers?
I don't like that term because it implies you're back in the early 80s, the late 70s, when historical romance was really coming into it. That was always, they were the books that were like forced consent and the hero taking the heroine whether she wanted it or not. They're classical romance, you know, there's some good sex scenes in there. I tried to build up as much tension as I could, but I tried to make them romantic too. Because I want people to like my, you know, be with, like, swooning over the heroes and thinking, you know, the heroine's not so bad. You know, they don't hate her like they did in the first book. So, I tried to keep them as classic as I can, but with a few more modern, I guess, overtones to them.
Well, we were talking about, like, The Flame and the Flower, the one that got you hooked, you know, the old school foil embossed covered swooning romances.
Yeah,
Well, and what's funny is I'd asked you if you'd ever read Joanna Lindsay's Shauna.
Yeah, no.
Guess, guess what a portion of it's about.
What?
Pirates.
Wait, yeah, I wonder if I got the idea from her book, A Pirate's Love, which I think was the first Lindsay I ever, and I thought I read everything by her, but I missed this one.
Well, and we joke about them, but I love the Wood Whist too, you know, Hawk and the Dove, all of, you know, Flame and the Flower. I love all of them.
Right.
I love all of them too. They were just the perfect while away the afternoon type book. And
yeah,
I'll confess too, I'm a huge fan of Barbara Cartland.
Now, you see, I've never read her, and I know I'm supposed to because she's like the queen of regencies. And they're short and sweet, and
you can actually learn a lot, and I'll learn a lot by reading her. I mean, she did not sell 1 billion with a B books for no reason.
Right.
They have
no,
some of the cleanest three-act structure you'll ever read. You can take her books and, like, separate them into quarters, and you go to, like, they're all roughly in the 25,000 to 30,000 K range, and you can go to about 6,000 to 8,000 words, and boom, there will be the end of the first act within a page or two. And the same thing, they're formulaic, but they're very cleanly written. And to me, they were like they were like opening up a bag of potato chips. I always knew what I was going to get.
All right. Yeah. I know she writes the traditional regency.
Oh, yes.
Which,
yes.
You know, will never die. And I don't know. I think part of why I haven't is I like my books a little more on the steamier side. I mean, I had one editor who told me I ended up in When I'm With You. When I was going through the edits, I had moved a sex scene, and I forgot to take out one of them. I can't remember if I moved it from the back to the front or from the front to the back, but I left both in word for word the exact same way. So my editor sends me a note saying, word for word, you have to change this. So I did. I rewrote the second one. And when I sent it back to her and she got back to me, she said she was blushing reading it. I was like, yes, all right, I've done my job. So I think with Barbara Cartland, I know the traditional regency, they close the door. And I want to know what's going on behind the door.
They were extremely sweet. They were very, very sweet. There was usually an extremely passionate kiss, maybe a small grope, but for the most part, with only a few, they weren't really forced consent. They were actually, I mean, there was a little bit of ravishment in there, but most of them were pretty sweet. It was after they were, you know, overcome with love for each other that they fell into the white hot center of the sun type of thing. And so what is the heat level on yours?
Well, if you go on a scale of 1 to 5, with 5 being the hottest, they're probably between a 3 and a 4, depending on the book. I think the hottest one right now is probably when I'm with you. And because I said the very first Eden's Pass, I wrote it, like, the original draft, when I was 17 or 18. So what did I know back then? And, you know, as I've gotten through and as I've gotten older and I'm more comfortable and I let these characters just do their thing, Rafe and Katie are pretty hot.
Excellent. Excellent. Oh, I know. Isn't it funny that in my first book, Devil's Deal, the one scene is extremely awkward. It's very, very awkward on purpose. It's supposed to be. It's supposed to be that way. Like the bed is squeaking, you know, and stuff like that. It's very awkward. In the second one, now that the characters know each other and they've been, you know, shot at and chased across the country and everything, they just get reacquainted right there on the dance floor.
Right. Well, you know, that's kind of, yeah, when you're comfortable with somebody or, you know, your adrenaline's racing, it really doesn't matter at that point. But, you know, that's kind of how Rafe and Katie were. They were together and then they were split up because, well, I don't want to give too much away, but they're reunited and he is not about to let her get away. He doesn't care what he has to do to prove it to her. And she doesn't seem to mind it very much.
No, and again, that's a very satisfying formula, because do you find readers, when you read this type of a book, there are certain things a romance has to include. Am I right?
Mm-hmm. Oh yes, absolutely.
And what are they for you? No, what are they for you? What are those parts that have to be in there?
Well, you have to. There has to be a good enough reason for them to be apart. It cannot be something that can be cleared up with a simple explanation. There has to be some sort of a betrayal, but not to the point where one could never possibly forgive the other. And they have to end up happy. I like happy couples. There's, you know, especially now with everything going on in the world and in everything, you know, happy endings. I like that. It's, you know, it's a constant. It's like a comfort thing. You know, these people, after everything they've been through, things are going to work out for them.
And then there has to be the hero has to be dreamy.
Oh, no doubt. Absolutely. I have the best time dreaming up my heroes.
Oh, isn't it the best? The best thing ever.
Yeah. So, you know, you have to make them perfect, but not too perfect.
Right. The one, because I've just released a short romance, and one of the first reviews came in and said that I made Creighton the hero. I made him noble and strong, but not too perfect.
Right. And that's how they should be. They can't be unattainable.
Well, there's a line in Shauna where Shauna she's this, you know, impetuous beauty, your standard impetuous beauty, and her father's trying to marry her off. And none of the suitors are good enough for her. And our hero sweeps in and he says the line, he goes, "Did it ever occur to you that the perfect man might also be waiting for the perfect woman?"
Ooh. Ouch.
There's some shade some shade right there. But there's also some truth to it. You know, you can't have either your hero or your heroine just be such paragons.
Right. No, they have to be imperfect. You have to give them that. They have to have some kind of fault.
And on yours, are we talking happily ever after or happily for now?
No, I do happily ever after, because they've suffered. People have died, and, you know, people have run away, and, you know, they have to have happily ever after.
Now, will any of the characters from previous books, will they pop up in future books in the series?
Oh, sure. Yeah, the Sebastianos and the Santa Cruz families are very close with each other. And, you know, in the end, Finn and Inigo have, like I said, 6 or 7 kids. I can't even remember. And Gabby and Diego have their family. And, of course, they're all best friends. And everybody pops up at some point. And I have the most fun writing the Sebastiano brothers because, you know, it's a big family. I'm from a small family, so I just imagine that this is what it's like. But just the way the brothers all interact with each other and with their sisters, I have the best time writing them because one's not too serious and the other one really is. And then they, you know, play off of each other and they get into trouble together and they fight together and everything. And they're just fun to write.
So what's up next for the Sebastianos?
Well, I'm waiting to hear back on something that had been under contract with Samhain. And when they went under, I submitted. And I'm waiting to hear back from my editor and entangled on that. And that would be Elena's story. And she is Finn and Inigo's daughter. And I love her story. And I really hope it comes out because it's her and it's a Duke, not a Duke, an Earl. So I go over to England and I'm playing around with the peerage on this one. But again, it was fun to write. And a lot of I wrote a lot of it after my mom had died. And for me, I hadn't written for a long time. So when I finally got this story idea, it was like it opened the floodgates. And it helped me deal with so much of what was going on that I really, really hope it comes out.
Excellent. So if Kim's editor is out there listening, come on, come on, come on. You can do it. You can do it.
Oh, I hope so. I really, really want it.
And I forgot to mention earlier, if anyone would like to call in and talk about romance novels with Kim and I, the number is 347-633-9609. And now, what are some of your other? You said you're also with Wild Rose Press. What do you have there?
Over there, I have 2 Regency set books. What's the name of the family? St. James family, I think they are. It's been so long since I've looked at them. Oh, I probably should admit that. But my newest series with them is one. It takes place in a middle, an Eastern European country that I created, Mordania. It deals with the Mordanian royal family. And I have 2 books in that series. So, you know, the first one is Stolen Promise, which is the story of the future king of Mordania and the woman who was betrothed to him when she was a child. She was smuggled out of the country after an assassination attempt on her family. And she doesn't realize she's the long lost princess to, you know, marry the king. And when they find her, she's not happy about it. Because she has her own little life and her independence, and she likes it that way. But she also has the gift of sight, and the king needs that to keep his country safe. So he is going to marry her no matter what. And eventually, of course, she realizes, well, you know, being a queen might not be so bad. And Stefan's kind of a looker, and he's not a bad person. So, you know, they have their, you know, there's also some intrigue with, you know, a spy inside the royal house who's not exactly what he seems. And Stefan's life is in danger, and by the time he realizes it, it's almost too late to do anything about it. So, and then the second book in that series is Don't Tempt Me, which is Stefan's half-brother and his story. So it was fun to write. I liked creating my own country and my own, you know, I got to do a lot of research on the Russian royal families and a little bit of the English system. And I kind of squashed them together to come up with my own, which was nice because I had my own rules. I didn't have to worry about it. And it was fun.
So will there be additional books in this series?
I'm not sure. I've tried to start a few, but I don't know. I haven't found the right story just yet. So, and I've been working on the Sebastianos for the last 2 years. And they've kind of taken precedence over everything because I really like writing them.
That's awesome. That is awesome. So in this Mordania series, you said she has the gift of sight. Does it delve off into the paranormal or anything at all?
A little bit. She can read objects, so it deals with psychometry and And, you know, that's her main thing, is she can touch an object and see either what happened to its owner or, you know, who the owner, you know, like a mysterious medallion comes into play, and she can figures out who it belongs to and, you know, why it's so important that she has it. So there's a little bit, but not too much.
Oh, it sounds like a lot of fun, just in general, across the board. Those two books sound fun.
Yeah, they were. It said one, but they both started out as National Novel Writing Month projects. And what happened with Stolen Promise was the story I was trying to write just wouldn't come. So, you know, the train derailed, and I said, let's just see where it goes. And I just let my imagination go, and, you know, eventually found something I could work with. And again, it was, you know, a blast to write.
Excellent. And now, although I have to admit, I'm just totally green with envy right now, because you have tickets to see Springsteen on Broadway.
I know. I can't wait. Oh, nobody was more shocked than me, let me tell you. I just figured that when I signed up, because you had to do the whole, you know, submit your email and they would maybe send you a code. And I thought, well, what do I have to lose? I'm probably not going to get it, but you never know. And then I got an email the night before the tickets went on sale saying I had been given this code and, you know, good luck tomorrow. And it took me like 10 minutes to get tickets, which, seriously, I didn't think was going to happen.
And again, even, you know, that even with that restraining order that you and I have, you're going to be in the same room with
I know. I'm going to have to, like, hide behind my husband because, you know, I can't get too close or else bad things will happen. And I mean that in way. I mean good, bad things.
No, Daddy, what is listening? That's our running joke. Kim and I are Springsteen's super fans, and we're always running on. It's going all of the obviously that's the reason we never run into him. That pesky restraining order. So, it was just
I
that
never
one time,
that.
No, you know.
Right. Oh my god!
That's going to be a superb show. That's going to be it's going to harken back to the club shows he was doing in the 90s when they were out in LA, and it's just going to be the best. Those acoustic, those small almost club like acoustic shows. And you said the first time is you're going to see him in November.
Yeah, I'll see him. I'm going to the November 1st show.
So there's a good little birthday present.
Yeah, I know. That's what I told my husband. I said, you know, I'm going to sign up for this and see what happens. And if I get them, happy birthday to me. And he was like, all right. he knows. I told him years ago, he says, Springsteen tickets go on sale. I'm trying to get them. If I get them, I'm going. You can come with me. If not, my brother's a huge fan. I take him to shows. He takes me to shows. I've always got someone to go with me.
At some point on one of these tours, you're going to have me on your sofa. I mean, this is like the no problem whatsoever. And you did finally get to see the River show, correct?
Yes, I saw two of the mega concerts that he did in August last year, where he broke the 4-hour mark on both of them. I saw one with my husband and one with my brother, and both shows were awesome.
I had actually ended up seeing that one three times because I was on this kind of cross-country trip visiting friends. So it's like, let's see, between this friend and this friend is Nashville. Ooh, okay. And between this friend and this friend is Louisville.
Yeah. Right, and I remember thinking, you know, really, that's not fair. Why should I want to go? Because you saw when he was still doing a lot off of the Ties That Bind set, and I wanted to hear Meet Me in the City. I wanted to hear that song more than anything, and he didn't play it.
he opened the show with that one. The two of the nights that I saw it. Well, it was funny. I got the day that because I'm closest to Kansas City, but the day the Kansas City tickets were going to go on sale, I was supposed to be out of town. So I'm like pouting. And I saw, Oklahoma City, which is about 5 hours in the other direction. So I got tickets to Oklahoma City, and then my plans changed. Well, I'm not going to miss a show that's only 90 minutes away. So I got tickets to Kansas City too, as one does.
Awesome.
They're not on it. They don't use
But
no, go ahead. Well, they don't use Ticketmaster out here. It's Axios. And I just don't think the scalping issue is quite as serious on Axios as it is on Ticketmaster.
You know, you're probably right. And, you know, I end up seeing him either in New York or New Jersey. So you've got just the sheer population alone. It's crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, they were saying even with the code for these theater shows, tickets were showing up on StubHub within a few minutes at, you know, $1,200, $1,500 each. It's crazy.
Yeah, that's insane. That's insane. So we're still to that. Something needs to be done about that sort of thing. But still, happy birthday and congratulations.
Yes, thank you. I know. Oh, yeah, go me.
So when you're not writing kissy books, what do you read?
Well, I read kissy books, but I also I like biographies, history, especially World War II, the Normandy invasion. I've read pretty much everything I can get my hands on with that. What else do I read? That's kind of it. You know, I read pretty much whatever catches my eye. You know, on a rainy day, it's Agatha Christie. If I don't feel well, I pull out, you know, an old Miss Marple. I read some of the classics, like Truman Capote and Catcher in the Rye, one of my favorite books. So my book taste is kind of like my music taste. I like a little bit of everything, except country. So
I have to confess, being out here in Kansas, I listen to some bro country in the van because it's mixed in with local news. And
right.
There are a few songs I actually do like, kind of honky tonky stuff, but most of it's pretty eye rolling, I'll admit it. So that's my great secret. Well, if you like Catcher in the Rye, I want to recommend to you, it's called Kinflix by Lisa Alter. And it's been called Catcher in the Rye for girls.
Really? Okay.
It's basically about how it's set in the 70s, and it's basically how girls, you kind of go, you start out, you're daddy's little girl, and then you're the cheerleader, your boyfriend is on the football team, and then you rebel against that, and you go out with some outlaw that because your parents hate him, and she just keeps knocking through these different roles. She experiments with girls at one point, and then she ends up in this really dead end marriage, and finally at the very end of it, she ends up completely alone, and she's like, you know, what the hell do I do with myself? I'm completely, you know, because there's not a man to tell her who she's supposed to be. So I think it's wickedly funny, and
I'll have to check it out.
Very, very, very good book. And, you know, for kissy books, I did just write that little Barbara Cartland-style one. So feel free.
Oh, I will. Yes, absolutely. Yeah, this week I've been – it's been just, you know, the kids started school and everything.
Oh, yeah.
I remember last time I even sat down to read. You know, I try, and it's just not happening.
So how old are your two munchkins now?
My oldest will be 17 in December. And
no
my
way!
Baby,
I'm sorry, you're wrong. You're in error here. Obviously counted incorrectly.
Oh, I wish. Now she'll be 17. She's 6 inches taller than me. She started her junior year of high school. It's so hard to believe. And you know, my baby will be 12 next month. So they're like getting older on me, which means I must be getting older, and I don't like that. We have to stop that.
Oh, yeah, don't even talk to me about that one. No, that's cool. I always know that first week of school is always hectic around your house from the social media postings. And so you're on Facebook. If anybody do you have an author page, or is it just your personal page?
No, I have an author page. It's Kimberly Nee.
And that's N-E-E.
Yes.
And can they find you on?
I have to spell it. Oh, go ahead.
And can they find you on Twitter?
Yes, I'm at Kimberly Nee. There's nothing original about me. There really isn't.
Hey, my last name has four letters, and people still, and two of them are the same, and people still pronounce it incorrectly. So,
you know, they spell it wrong, they pronounce it wrong, and my first name throws it off because I say knee, but no K, and they're like, but there's a K, and I'm like, no, just knee, and it's actually a word on top of everything. So, yeah, three letters, nobody spells it right, nobody pronounces it right. It's amazing.
And anybody who was following your books before the Samhain meltdown, they can now find you on the Entangled Publishing website.
Yes, they can. I'm there, and my books are there. Like I said, Eden's Pass is coming out. What's today? Today's the 8th, the 9th. I'm not even sure what day of the week it is. And it's coming out in like 2 weeks. The other two were released last month, so everyone should go out and buy them and enjoy them and tell me how much they love them.
I want to tell you, the covers are gorgeous.
Oh,
I mean,
I love the covers.
I mean, they are classic school romance covers. Everything but everything. All they would need is like foil embossing to be
right. Oh,
and
no.
They look right like the beauties out of the 70s and 80s. So they Entangled really outdid themselves with your covers.
They did an awesome job, and you fill out the forms saying what you what your heroine looks like, what your hero looks like, what do you see on this cover? And I tell them, you're the artist. I just don't like the color orange. Anything else is fine. If you want to do the classic clinch covers, I love them. If you want to do more modern covers, I'm fine with that. I said, you're the ones who know what you're doing. And the first one, Tiger Eyes, and When I'm With You came back. I mean, as soon as I saw them, I'm like, that's perfect. Eden's Past took a little bit of back and forth between me and the artist, but they were awesome. She got what I wanted, and I love all of them. They did such a great job on them.
Well, I mean, pirate romances set in the 1600s have to have classic covers. They just have to.
Yeah. Yes. Yes, they
I mean,
do.
These are actually the books that I'm really loving lately are the ones that look like you could walk into the drugstore and see them on the rack.
Oh,
they're
love
just
that.
That old school. That old school, like when you and I were buying romances when we were in high school, of going,
right,
it's like, there's the new Kathleen Woodwiss and the others, and you'd be grabbing them. Oh my God, they weighed a ton, and you couldn't wait to go home and get into them. So
that was Joanna Lindsay for me. I bought them as soon as they came out.
And quite as long. They're a little bit more the modern length. They're not, I mean, geez, what some of those would run like what, 500 and 600 pages.
I know Joanna Lindsay was well over 400 usually. Yeah, these are anywhere from 90 to 95,000 words, give or take. Mm-hmm. Yeah. They're not huge. But they're not your mass market paperback either. They come out in trade paperback, so they're bigger.
Mm-hmm. And they're also contained stories that are part of a generational saga. Am I correct in that?
Right. Yeah, they're the first two are the older generation, and the future books that are hopefully will be coming out that I'm working on are the next generation. So other characters pop up, and they make mention of things that happened in the past, but no one would be lost if the third book in the series is the first one they pick up. They'll know exactly who everybody is and how everybody's related. But it's not, they're not beaten over the head with it either. It's just made mention in passing. So they know what's going on, and they know why this person feels this way and that.
Well, that's excellent. And I want to thank you for coming on tonight. This was fantastic. And you'll have to come back on when you get the next book in the series out, because I want to hear all about it.
I would love to. This was great. I had a great time.
Definitely. So again, it's Kimberly Nee. That's NEE. You can find her on Amazon, or you can find her on the Entangled Publishing website with the Sebastiano series of dark, sexy pirates. What's better than that?
That's right. Everyone should go out and buy them right now.
All right. I'll say good evening to you now, and I'll see you around social media.
Yes,
and
you
I
will.
Wanted the little Housekeeping announcement I have to make is the Blue Plate Special is broadcast is owned and copyrighted by the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network, LLC. And you can follow the Blue Plate Special on Facebook to stay up to date with who's going to be on the menu next. Next Friday night, the 15th, we're going to go back to some dark crime when I talk to Ed Kurtz. And that one's going to be a blast, too, at 9 Eastern time. And until then, I'll say goodnight to everybody and thank you for stopping by. Bye.